Hey, it's me, Richie T, and on the phone with me right now is Nick Brown. It's the lead vocals and guitar of the band Mona. Thanks for joining me.
What's happening? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. Where are you at right now?
I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, in my house.
Okay.
Nashville.
So let me ask you this. As I'm reading the bio, it says some of you guys are from Dayton, Ohio, and some of you guys are from Bowling Green, Kentucky. Which one are you?
I'm Dayton, Ohio.
Okay. I was trying to think. I recently interviewed another band from Bowling Green, Kentucky, and I'm convinced now that it's just like this secret little town of rockers.
Yeah, there's a few bands. And my bass player, Zach, and guitar player Jordan are probably, like, grew up with all those guys. Who was it?
I'm trying to think. That's why I was hoping you were from Kentucky, because I was like, who was it that I was talking to?
There's Cage the Elephant.
Yes.
Sleeper Agent.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple of them.
Yeah, it was Cage the Elephant that I was thinking of. What a crazy story those guys have. That was fascinating.
Yeah, it's almost as good as ours.
Oh, well, let's get into it. Come on, Nick.
No,
you're like, yeah, let's talk all about another band as you interview me. Sure. Now, Mona, how long have you guys been together for?
This lineup probably going on 4 years. But as far as, like, the idea, it's been a while. I mean, ever since I was, like, ever since I was young, I've always wanted to kind of have the idea of, I had older sisters, so I never had brothers. So I kind of looked at the Ramones and the Clash and those, like, Beatles films and early U2 stuff where you just see, like, dudes walking together. And I kind of always wanted to, like, start a band. And so I've always had that kind of, like, this is a good way to be artistic and get in some trouble at the same time, but then also, like, have, like, your little gang,
Well, the way you're making it sound, it makes you sound like you're a forever old, but how old are you?
I'm old enough not to answer that question.
Oh.
I'm young enough for what I'm doing.
All right, I'll take that.
Yeah.
But you say this carnation, so was Mona existent with other band members, or was it a different band at that point, and finally you found these guys and came up with Mona? Or?
Yeah, I was like a pastor's son, so I was doing I was just doing music in general. Like, I loved music. Like, we never, like, stopped and said, like, let's start a rock and roll band. I was just doing music that I liked and had emotions. And even still, like, I don't consider us to be, like, great storytellers as much as we are just, like, for lack of a less hippie word, like, kind of just emotionalist. Like, this song is angry.
Yeah.
This song is, like, it's just getting across human emotion. And we were just kind of doing that. And Vince, my drummer and I, we just kind of always loved music and passion, and like growing up, we saw what it did in a congregation, and you knew when it was bad because people just weren't into it, but you knew when it was good because of like the power of it. And we kind of saw that inside the church, and the same. I grew up in the same denomination as like Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis and stuff. So it's very like passionate form of worship and music, and then we kind of just wanted to play more, so we started just playing in bars, and that kind of turned into what a rock and roll band is. But we never set out to, like, let's get a record deal, let's be in a band, let's do all these things. It was really more about, like, let's, we play hard, and we play pretty aggressive, because it's more like therapy for us. Like, well, this is how we're going to make it through life, is banging on instruments. And then doing that, honestly, opened up a lot of doors for us to do it, for a living.
Let's talk about the congregation. So what are we talking here? Is it like Southern Baptist? Is it?
It's charismatic, Pentecostal. I mean,
okay.
It's God type denominations. We definitely had the tongue talking and the running the aisles and the raising of hands. We didn't have the snakes or anything like that. But I think it's a very beautiful denomination. I also think there's more Frosted Flakes and Fruit Loops involved as well, so it's kind of we saw plenty of both growing up, kind of like rock and roll in the music industry. There's plenty of people that are doing it right and people that are just kind of playing the part.
How interesting. So you and your buddy, sorry, say his name again, your buddy Zach?
He plays drums.
Yeah. So you guys were just in the same congregation and started playing music for a congregation. And I would bet with that you would see, like you say, just some pretty crazy kind of celebration stuff, but really see the effect that that music could have on people.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, I mean, we started really, really young. I mean,
how young? What are we talking?
Like, as long as I can remember. Like, I mean, I remember being, I mean, you know the artist Dion, who wrote, like, Run Around Sue and The Wonder and stuff like that? I can remember being 3 years old and Dion being at our church, and, like I have really, like, vivid memories of being in church at very young ages. So, I mean, by the time I could, like, talk, I was already singing in choirs. And my grandmother, Mona, was, you know, she played piano and organ and, like, on the worship band. And the grand piano in our church that I grew up with was an old Jerry Lee Lewis grand piano from one of his old studios and stuff. So, I mean, it was definitely, like, it was just music. As long as I can remember, my dad and his uncles were in a trio, you know, like the Brown Boys trio, like, when they were younger. My grandmother was in a band called the Chapel Keys, traveled, you know, the tri-state area. Like, and this was, like, back in the, you know, 50s. Before everyone was, like, touring rock and roll, even before rock and roll itself was at the height that it got. Like, my grandma was traveling around with, like, her and, like, this church band. So it's, like, always been music, as far as I can remember.
Was it a forced thing, or were you just passionate about it, and then, boom, that was it?
I had the very, very rare experience of seeing it done right. And I mean, like, I have parents that have known each other since third grade and are still together and actually practice what they preached. So I grew up with a lot of shit falling around me, but I never saw it at home. Like, when my dad was a pastor, he wasn't fucking his secretary or stealing from the church. When behavior that I was taught at home, the only reason why I'm not bitter and in jail is probably because, like, I had very good examples. Now, if I would take a step back and all the examples that I had in the church around me, I'd probably, like, be a much bigger head case than I already am, just because, I mean, it's a whole other conversation. Like, we were very anti, like, forcing anyways. Even with Mona, like, it's not our place to tell you what to feel. Like, but we do want to encourage you to feel. I fucking hate apathy. But it's also, like, we're not going to be preaching, but this is right, or vote this way, or feel this way, or stand for this. Like, I think it's silly for an artist to try to abuse that platform. But I think an artist should say, well, feel something. Either hate me, or love me, or stand for that, or stand for what your choice. But,
you know, something.
You're a human with emotions, and let's provoke those.
Does that does your religiousness from your growing up, has that transcended into your adulthood, or is it something you've kind of stepped away from?
No, I mean, I'm not naive. I don't believe in Saturday morning cartoons the way I used to. I mean, I believe in real life, and I do have a faith, but, like, I'm just not naive. I mean, I think humans are humans, and they need to live, no matter what God they believe in. They're still on Earth. So I have faith that I keep to myself, and I'd probably be judged by some of my morals, but who wouldn't? And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you know, you're not supposed to talk about politics or your religion,
yeah,
to keep it safe. But I'm not afraid to talk about any. But that's where it just gets dangerous, because most people end up being preachy and trying to put something on somebody else. And we're very careful, you know, not to do that.
Cool. Let's sample a little bit of music right now, shall we?
Nice.
I've got two. Would you like me to do Goons, or would you like me to do Freeway? Which one would you like first?
Maybe we start pretty and end hard. Start with Freeway.
Okay. Let's play a little bit of Freeway right now, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Nice. Got me going down a freeway, and you're all alone. I don't care about what he said. And you know, these games that we play, it's just a matter of time till I'm a
All right, so that's Freeway. Go ahead. Tell me how that song came about, where it's coming from, all that kind of stuff.
Basically, when we were mixing the first album with Rich Costi, he has like a B room that had like a grand piano. And Rich and I got along really well, but there was times when like, it was like, okay, Nick, leave me alone. So I'd go into the other room and just play the piano. And that's when I wrote Freeway. It was kind of just like a pondering kind of, you know, it can be applied to a lot of things. It can be applied to relationship. It can be applied to, you know, beliefs. It can be applied to a lot of things. But it's just kind of that push and pull of wanting to get out of something but not want to be the one that initiates the kind of final deterioration of the situation, which I think a lot of people do in general. You'd rather somebody else pull the cord for you than have to actually initiate the weird confrontation.
Or be responsible for whatever the consequences are by whatever the choices that you make.
Yeah, exactly.
We like to blame. No, that was you.
Yeah,
was
definitely.
Because you did that, not because I did that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think we do it with everything. You know, I think we do it with everything. So it's a very, like, generic bad word, but it's a very universal theme. A lot of times I'm not trying to Bob Dylan the shit out of things. I'm really just trying to, you know, provoke human emotion in some way. Just, I love the big songs that apply to life, you know. That's why the Beatles are still what they are, is because those songs are still applied.
Do you ever get people that come up to you, though, and they're talking about your music and they're like, oh, Freeway, I love how it totally talked about, and then go off on some sort of tangent where you're like, I don't even know how you would get that from that song, but thanks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, big time. I mean, with the first single off the first time, Listen to Your Love, it's very sarcastic about listen to your love, listen to your lover. And I'm implying that they're not the same thing. And in my head, and then I've had couples come up to me and they're like, yeah, we heard that lyric, you know, listen to your love, listen to your lover, and then how did it get this way? And we were fighting, and we like, just those lyrics hit us, and we just, you know, it helped save our marriage. And I'm like cracking up because it's written more about like getting out of something, not saying something. But it's people will apply things. I think that's the one thing that's beautiful about art, especially music. That's why I try not to be too literal too much, because I would rather a person have the freedom to apply to in their own life than for me to be some rigid songwriter. So like, no, this is definitely about a green shoe in Texas. Like, it can't mean anything else. I'd rather people apply it to their own lives.
I can't wait to hear that song about the green shoe in Texas, man. Get that one.
It's a doozy.
I want to play a little bit of Goons, and then we'll come back and talk about it. Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, it's you. Tell me about it.
It's this, like, sassy little song about making fun of Sinatra, but also, like, giving props to Sinatra. I mean, he kind of was against rock and roll, and, you know, at the time, he didn't know that he was kind of, he is an icon of rock and roll. And it's kind of like a reminder of, I mean, first of all, it's just a good bar drinking song, but it's also kind of a reminder of, like, you know, don't take yourself too seriously. Everyone gets it wrong sometimes, and, you know, enjoy it. You know, it's kind of just playing with the idea of this, like, rock and roll being this elusive thing, or maybe even, like, personifying a female that, like, Frank just didn't get, which is hilarious because, you know, Frank being Frank and doing it his way and being the man that he was, like, we always kind of look at him as this eternal badass. But here he is, and, you know, at congressional hearings testifying at the negative effects of rock and roll on America's youth while he's in the mafia, you know, screwing hookers.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like, it's just kind of the irony of the whole thing.
Is there let me ask you this, favorite Frank Sinatra song?
I'm one of those guys that has, like, his greatest hits and love them all. Like, I'm not... you know, I'm young enough to where it is definitely before my time, but mm-hmm. I just love his voice. I love that era of just like this confident crooner that really is just like, I mean, he doesn't even sweat. He's just too cool to sweat. You know what I mean? Like, and the influence that he had as a musician, I think that's where the arts at best should be, is at the top, influencing society and stuff like that. That's why I have to tip my hat to, you know, hip hop and pop right now, because really, no offense to my rock and roll peers, but no one's really doing it fearlessly or boldly. Everyone's kind of nonchalant and shoegazing, while, you know, hip hop stars are kind of the new rock stars, and you know, part of our goal is to help remedy that and remind people that, you know, rock and roll helped build this industry that we call, you know, the music industry, and it's it deserves its rightful place.
You alluded to it already, but Mona, I'm guessing, comes from your grandmother, whose name was Mona.
Yeah.
Speak a little bit about her.
I remember one of my favorite memories is, like, I was, like, playing outside and was supposed to come in, and I didn't come in, and she came out and was like, "Look, you need to come inside, or I'm spanking you." And I, like, laughed and tried to run away. And I jumped on, a lawn chair, and, like, it flipped over, and I smashed my fingers, like, on the pavement, to the point literally my fingers are bleeding. And my grandma comes, and I'm bawling. And she comes, she goes, "Well, one, you did that to yourself. Two, she spanks me. And three, get in the house, it's time to eat." And then after I did, then, I mean, she wasn't, like, a mean woman. Then after I did, like, she consoled me and stuff like that. But I just remember thinking, like, this woman does not mess around. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the way, like, my grandfather was, that's the way my parents are. You know, it's just kind of like, just, it's very loving, but it's also just like straight to business. You know, don't defy me. Like, stop being a child. You know what I mean? So with that kind of, those kind of influences, you kind of focus really quickly. So you either become very clear about what you're going to do in life or very confused. And luckily I became very clear.
It's Nick Brown from the band Mona. Their latest album is Torches and Pitchforks that came out on the 23rd of July. Now you guys are touring around. Is that the plan, or what's next for you guys?
Yeah, we did this. You know, Music Midtown. We're doing the ACLs. We did, like, a little one-off show for Details Magazine in L.A., and then we have, like, a week off after the second ACL, and we go to Portland on August 20th. The tour starts, and we pretty much go until December.
Who are you touring with?
We're touring with the Limousines, and then another band called The Dresses. And I'm looking forward to it because it's very different music than ours, and it's kind of like I want to see how it goes. You know, I mean, I've checked out their stuff, and it's completely different. But you know, I'm looking forward to meeting different personalities and getting out there and kind of having this like band of ruffians. I mean, we're going everywhere, too, like all over the United States. So it's going to be fun having three bands for the whole thing, just kind of, you know, doing what, you know, Presley and Cash used to do, just hopping in a car and going wherever they're listening. We had kind of a good experience on the first album and had a lot more clout in the UK. And we switched managers, switched spin, and switched focuses since then. So it's good to kind of like tee it up and be able to tour a lot in our own country.
Well, best of luck to you. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes. And there you go. Nick Brown from the band Mona. I appreciate it.